So before I speak, first of all, I just want to, I don't know if there was a reminder about the breakfast, Bird's Breakfast, 30th of May. If anyone wants to come, can you just put your name on the back of here, just so I've got a record of how many people. So just come put your name on there. And secondly, yes, we've been, 12 of us went, or 10 of us from here, went to the Colour Conference, got back at about 11 o'clock last night. And it was quite amazing. We took over that 10,000 women took over that place, and we even took over the men's toilets. So how about that? It was really funny actually, because there was a secret. We found a secret. I've forgotten who found it. Was it you, Vic? Vic found this secret, like, because the queues for the toilets, you can imagine, 10,000 women were hideous. The queues for the toilets, queues for the coffee. It was just. I kept having to remind myself every time I had thoughts. I thought, these are 10,000 women that are coming to find Jesus. So all the pushing and shoving and trampling of feet and snapping of arms and all sorts of things, it's all for Jesus, so it's okay. That was the only way I could deal with, like, the thoughts that come into my head. Anyway, the toilets, someone had kindly, so we took over the men's toilets, and I've got to say, you blokes, I don't know how you deal with the smell in those toilets, I'm sorry, but I know it's not your fault. But so these urinals, oh my gosh, they were horrendous. So what some kind woman had done that was probably part of this conference, thought, I know what to do to make it better. I know how to distract the women from the fact that these stinking urinals that they have to queue in for about 10 hours. We'll put a plant in the middle. So they put this plant in the middle of these urinals. It was really funny. But anyway, it was amazing. But obviously, it's very difficult to go to something like that and come out unchanged in some way. So I asked if anyone wanted to say anything about it, and I think Nicola is... Where is Nicola? Oh, you're right there. I think Nicola's going to come and... About that. Got a microphone. About the conference. It was an amazing time.
Conferences aren't my thing. I signed up for it, but about a week before I was due to go, I actually didn't want to go because I had lots of fears to overcome. And so I had a major wobble. So I wasn't going with any expectations. I wasn't even looking forward to it. I didn't even know why I signed up for it. But it was quite amazing. And I learnt a lot. And I think it was a respect that all the speakers had for each other. Mm. I think it was the fact that Joyce Meyer went, and she's nothing to do with Hillsongs, and she actually just happened to be in the same place at the same time and approached them to ask them if she could take... if they would like her to take a session, which I think speaks a lot about the actual conference. And it was amazing to stand there with like 10,000 other women and a few men who gate-crashed, I think.
Brave men.
They did gate-crash, really, didn't they?
How many of you men would come to 10,000 women?
No,
find a new wife.
It was incredible, and I think everybody actually probably learned something different from each of the speakers, because it was God speaking through them. It wasn't who they were, what they had to say. It was what God had to say through them, and the praise and worship was just phenomenal, really.
Yeah, it was, totally. Thank you. Vicky.
So, I don't want any of you lovely ladies to feel left out. While we were there, they actually showed about 4 adverts for next year. We hadn't even had this year's one. But if you would like to come next year, we're probably going to take a group next year as well. And at the moment, you can book for £80. I think it goes up to £120 nearer the time. So, I think it's the 28th of April next year, the Thursday, till the Saturday, the 30th. So, just something to think and pray about if you would like to go. It is amazing just being with all those people just worshipping God. And the speakers are just so on fire for Jesus. And it does sort of, you know, you go up on the mountain with God. And, yeah, you have to come back down to real life. And it's sort of applying it to your everyday life, you know. But things like that can really help to kind of boost your faith. And they take you out from everyday life to just focus on God. And yeah, we all had a really lovely time. And so if you'd like to go, we'll think about it. I have got some flyers, but I forgot them. They're at home. So next week I'll bring a few flyers and maybe get a little video to put up on the screen. Yeah.
Cool. I'll have 2 microphones. That'd be terrifying. Gosh. So yeah, hope we can get even more next year. So shine is my theme today, and I'm going to read to you from Matthew 5, these verses, which I think are going to come up. Let me tell you why you are here. You're here to be salt seasoning that brings out the God flavors of this earth. If you lose your saltiness, how will people taste godliness? You've lost your usefulness and will end up in the garbage. Here's another way to put it. You're here to be light, bringing out the God colors in the world. God is not a secret to be kept. We're going public with this, as public as a city on a hill. If I make you light bearers, you don't think I'm going to hide you under a bucket, do you? I'm putting you on a light stand. Now that I've put you there on a hilltop, on a light stand, shine. Keep open house. Be generous with your lives. By opening up to others, you'll prompt people to open up with God, this generous Father in heaven. God, I want to thank you so much that you have called us to be salt and to be light. I want to thank you about how you treat each one of us as individuals. I want to thank you that you took me as a broken, lost, hopeless person. You took me when I wanted to die, and you gave me the desire to live. And I thank you, God, and I never want to lose sight of that miracle. God, I pray that you would use me today as your mouthpiece. I want to be your vessel, God. I pray that you would speak through me. I pray I would hear your voice. You're an amazing God. I pray that anything that I say that isn't of you would be forgotten, but anything that comes from you, God, would be deeply implanted in our spirits, and that we would grow from it. Thank you, God, that you are the vine, that we are the branches. And God, I never want to lose sight of that I am the branch. I need you, God. I need you now as I stand here. I need you when I go home. I need you every moment of my life. God, I realize that my very existence is dependent on you. So use me, I pray. Amen. When I felt that God, these verses, when I was praying about what to speak about, and this is what I felt God laid on my heart, I was then questioning. I was then like, okay, so what do you want me to say? What do you want me to say, God? Are you sure? And I wanted some confirmation. And I love how God cares about each of us so individually. He knows what we need. And I can be a bit thick sometimes, a bit slow. I don't recognize things quickly. And so I believe he gave me these verses. And then yesterday, we were walking up towards Wembley. No, it wasn't that. That was another thing. I'm going to tell you about that in a minute. It was in the evening. It was before one of the speakers, and before we even had worship, actually. And they did like a song. They did Hillsong's Just Do. It's like the West End. It's like the shows that they put on. So they did this amazing song and dance, I think it was. And so I'd prayed this prayer, and then up, so I'm standing there, up behind the group in lights, says, "You are here to be light." And I was like, okay. I love that he confirmed that to me in such a direct way, because if he'd been a bit more subtle, I may not have got that, and I may have thought, oh, I don't know, is this right or not? Am I hearing from God, or is this what I want to say? And you know, I was thinking when I was there, when I was looking around at these 10,000 women, it reminded me of a concert I went to with my daughter a few years ago. It was a Muse concert, and I was terrified of going to big arena. I didn't like the thing, the crowd thing, the thought of being crushed with those people. It was just like, I didn't want to do it. Anyway, my brother had given me his ticket, so I went with my daughter, and we stood. It was the same thing. I couldn't go in that crowd in the middle. So in this concert, we were around the edge. Yeah, it was the O2. We were around the edge. And I looked down, and there was all this mass of mainly young people, actually. I was quite old there. But they all had their arms up. like both, and they were dancing and they were like going crazy. And you know, I can't remember the song it was, she'll know, but it was a song something about being anti the government or anti something. It was like, and they were like, yeah, you know, and it was, and I thought in that moment, I thought, how would it be to see all these people with their arms up in that same passion, that same enthusiasm for Jesus? Because they know what Jesus can do, because Jesus has done something in their lives, because they know him for themselves. And I remember in that moment thinking, that would just be incredible. You know, and there I have been these last few days seeing that in reality, and I found it so, so moving and so exciting to see. And all generations, one of the speakers did a wonderful thing. They got each generation to stand up, and each one, she was just like, first of all, she got the oldest people there, the over 60s, I think it was, to stand. And she was like, stand tall, stand with dignity, stand with, you know, we need you. So the over 60s got up and we all cheered. And it was just wonderful. And it went down through the generations. Nicola was thrilled because me and her are in the same generation, aren't we? And then you realise your age when you get down to it. And then there's Lydia's just jumped into that same generation of Helen. So she's actually getting on a bit now. So we had no under 20s there. So maybe next year we could get an under 20 there. Then we would have actually been five. Would it be five generations or four? I don't know. But anyway, the point was that, you know, what the speaker was saying, we need all the generations. All the generations, you know, we don't need a young church and then an old church and then we need each other because we're family and it's supposed to be family. And there was something about seeing something rise. I mean, God was so in that place and everyone was expectant, and to see everyone of all different ages there saying, you know, this is God. And it was a precious time, and it was special for me to see that dream that I had when I went to that Muse concert come to reality. So the theme was Be Found this weekend. And I was thinking about this yesterday. Be Found. And I kept looking, because we had these wristbands. I was looking at my wristband and I thought, do you know, don't we all want to be found, actually, you know, in the world? Don't we all want to be found, even if we're not aware of it? There's something in us, I think, that wants to be found. Because if our deep longings, as I've said before, are self-worth, a significance, a security, if they're the three things that we need to satisfy us, that can only actually be found in God, then we need him to find us. Because otherwise we're going to be roaming about for the rest of our lives. And I believe that even when we're not aware of it, we want to be found. You think of children when they play hide and seek. Hide and seek would be really boring if you didn't get found. I mean, children get bored, don't they? If no one comes to find them, they end up making loud noises or saying, I'm here. I mean, it's boring, isn't it? You want to be found. And I was thinking about how in life we hide. Whatever age we are, whatever we're going through, we hide. We can hide from other people. We can hide what we think they won't like about us. They won't like that, so I'll pretend that everything's okay. Or they won't like that this has happened in my past. They'll think that I'm a bad person if they know I've done this to someone else. If they know my sin. If they know what I'm capable of. If they know my thoughts. If they know some of the things that I've been through, then they won't like me. So what do? We hide. But I think that inside us, when we're doing that, we really would like them to find us. We really would like to be known. I think we have a desire to be known. And don't we hide from ourselves as well? Isn't there some things about ourselves where we think, I don't like that about myself. I don't want to be like that. And so we hide that part. We hide it away. We pretend it doesn't exist. We split off from that part of us. You know, it can get really extreme, this stuff. If we want to hide some stuff away, then we can split off from that. We're able to do that. And we hide from God, don't we? I mean, isn't that what happened back in Genesis, you know, Adam and Eve? They hid, didn't they? They hid because they were ashamed. They hid their shame. But deep inside them back then, they wanted to be found. They weren't resting easy. They lost their self-worth. They lost their significance. They lost their security. Because that could only be found in God. And they'd stepped away from God. They'd stepped away from his protection. And God didn't condemn them, did he? He came to find them. And that's the story, isn't it? That we've been living ever since. That God says, I don't condemn you. I don't hate you. I want to find you. You're lost. I remember a time just before I got sectioned, and I remember being in my attic, and I was hiding. I was hiding in my attic. And I didn't want to be found. That's what I would say to you. I would say I didn't want to be found. But you know what? Deep within me, deep inside me, was a little voice saying, find me. Not find me and lock me in a psychiatric hospital, but find me. Who am I? You know? And I think there's so many people. You know, we've all been through different things in this room, but so many people in the world that want to be found, that are crying out. And they might be walking around with smiles on their faces. They might be living normal lives. They might be going to work and raising families and everything else. Then you've got the other extreme, that have got addictions, that have got all sorts of issues, that are in psychiatric hospitals. They've got all sorts of things going on. And they're saying, find me. There's this little voice saying, find me. And I've been thinking about this, and I thought, do you know what? Have I lost sight of that? Have I forgotten what that's like, to be that hidden? Have I become a bit hardened to that? I remember Beth Moore. Beth Moore was one of the speakers this weekend, and I remember reading in her book many years ago where she said, I never want to forget what it's like in the pit, what it was like in the pit. And I think that's so wise, because your focus can go off somewhere else, and you can start thinking, right, I'm going to serve Jesus, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But you can lose sight of the rawness of that, you know, the rawness of that feeling. And I think what she said then was so wise. And I've written down a quote that she said, where she said, I'm going to scream from the mountaintop until the day I die. This woman is passionate for God. You know, she is passionate. 30 years she's been preaching, and she hasn't lost that. She said, I'm going to scream from the mountaintop until the day I die that God will redeem any life, save any soul, and use anybody who will cooperate with him. I know, because I know what he did for me, and he didn't have anything good to work with here. You know, there's this sense of urgency, and I know for me personally, I felt that so strongly. I felt that so strongly a couple of years back probably, and I think, goodness, I want that back, that sense that, you know, I just feel this world is so broken. We talk about how broken this world is, but people are lost. People need to be found. And we're part of that. That's what we're here for. And when we are found, we need to shine, don't we? Isn't that what we're here for? Isn't that what this is saying? Isn't this is what God is saying to us? That we need to shine. And that saltiness that's talked about, you know? If we don't do anything with how God has transformed our life, how he's given flavour to our lives, if we don't tell other people, how are they going to know? Because not everyone's going to come along and pick up a Bible and say, well, I'll find out if there's anything in this that will help me. It's through us. He's calling us to be that light. So when we're found, that's what we need to do. That's our focus. And I think sometimes, again, I speak for myself, I complicate things. And I think, do you know what? I've forgotten the simple thing that Jesus came into my life and changed it. Jesus took away my desire to die and gave me a desire to live. And that's so amazing. And I think, you know, back to that time when I was in that psychiatric ward, I look back and I think, gosh, I'd given up all hope when I was in that place. And I'm in that room and I was just thinking about how I could end it all, what I could do, what pills I could get together, what I was going to do when they let me out. I had no hope. And do you know what? Something reminded me of something someone said this weekend. But you know what happened? Is that my dad came in and he took me out of that place. Rightly or wrongly, whatever people would say, he didn't care about that. He cared about me. He cared that I was trapped and he wanted me to have freedom. That's all he cared about at that time. So he walked in that place and he took me by the hand and he marched me out. He took me by the hand and he took me out of that place. And he said as he was leaving, he didn't care in that moment about what people would say. He saw his dying daughter in a hospital that had no hope. And do you know what he said as he walked away from that place? As we walked away hand in hand, he turned around and he said, I'm the vicar of Boughton-on-Chelsea. My phone number is 743321. Do you know, and he put me in that car and he said, I could put you in a train and you could go anywhere. You could run away. You could run away and hide. Or he said, you can come home. And he knew they'd come get me. But he took me home. My dad did that for me. And I know that's what God does. That's what God does for us. That's the heart of a father. He'll lay everything aside. You know, he came for that one sheep, didn't he? That one lost sheep. That's how much he loves each one of us. And do you know what happened? And this is what I want to get back. What happened to me when I got out of that place? I didn't know Jesus then. I didn't know him. I had a little daughter that I thought would be better off without me. She'd be better off without her mother because I'm just useless. I hated myself. I wanted to die so that she could be free of me. But you know what? When I got out of there, I wanted to go back and I wanted to rescue everyone else. And isn't that what this is about? Isn't that, you see it in films, don't you? You see it in scenes where people are rescued from a fire. A fireman goes in and rescues someone and brings them out. What do the people do? They want everyone else out. If our house was on fire and I got dragged to that house, I'd run back in for my family, wouldn't I? I wouldn't think, well, I'm all right then. I didn't get burnt to death. I'm fine, thanks. Thanks for rescuing me, fireman. I'd say, I love them. I love them. And I think, isn't that same passion what we need for our world, for each other? You know, I'm fine. I'm out of the fire. God has set me free. I'm still on a journey. Gosh, I've got a long way to go. But I'm out of the fire. And now I need to go back in and I need to tell other people that they don't need to be burnt. That there's hope. That they can be rescued. That they can be found. And I think, gosh, I had that feeling back there and I didn't know Jesus. And that was for them to be rescued into this world. Oh, gosh, what is this world? You know, how much more to be rescued eternally? And time is running short. You know, this is urgent times. When we were walking up to Wembley, not the one we were in, the stadium, the big one? When we were walking down the pathway, I was walking alongside Nicola, who I think still doubts my sanity. But when we were walking down, there's lights that come up across the stadium, and it advertises different stuff. I don't know if any of the rest of you saw it, but it just advertises different things. As we were walking down, the words came up, follow. And then there was a gap, and it said, in the footsteps of. And then my heart jumped, because I wanted it to say, Jesus. I was willing it to say, Jesus. And I was looking, and it said, in the legends. And it was football stars or something. And I said, Nicola, wait for this to come up again. Wouldn't it be amazing if it said Jesus? And we waited and we waited and we queued to get into this place with 10,000 other women. And I was looking and it didn't come up. And my mum came along and I thought, and it just didn't come up again. It only came up that once. I seriously didn't imagine it. It said follow in the footsteps of the legends. And I thought, goodness, you know, there's only one set of footsteps I want to follow in. You know, there's one set of footsteps and they're the footsteps of Jesus. Micah 6 verse 8 says, what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. That's what he wants us to do. That's what he requires of us. Act justly, love mercy, walk humbly. And we can do that. He's given us everything we need to be able to do that. He's given us Holy Spirit to equip us to do whatever we need to do. And what does walking with God look like? Gosh, being humbled. Gosh, I need to be humbled. So need to be humbled. God does so much for us, doesn't he? And he just requires that we walk with him, that we act justly, that we love mercy. That's amazing. That's amazing. And he's asking us to just give to others what he's given to us. To love. To love ourselves as well as he loves us. And to love others as he loves us. And you know, it's all very well having that light. Having that light within us. But it needs to shine, doesn't it? Torch doesn't work unless you turn it on, does it? You've got to do that. You can only show the way when you turn on the light. I had a conversation a little while back with one of my college friends about addictions. We were studying addictions that weekend. And we were both saying, well, is it okay to be addicted to Jesus? And we both had our stories, and he'd been addicted very, very heavily. He'd been in prison, addicted to drugs and alcohol. And we were both like, it was interesting with him. We are so individual. And I think that thing of putting each person into a box, right, this is what happens if you've suffered with this. This is what happens when you suffer with that. We've all had different things. Some of us have had similar things, similar symptoms. But God has a different plan for each one of us. And we're walking that path. And we never get there. We'll never get there till we get to eternity. And for him, for my friend, he's decided he can't even be around drink. So I could not sit next to him with my glass of wine. He can't do that. That man's faith blows me away. That man is counselling a young woman at the moment who's been sexually abused. Now, this man is covered in tattoos. He's got scars all over his head. He looks quite tough. Do you know, he's so soft inside. And you know, I love how God does that. I love how God takes someone, changes them. And you know, no matter what you might think on the outside, no matter what our prejudices are, no matter what our assumptions are, what conclusions we come to, what God does to somebody is amazing. The love in that man blows me away, actually. It blows me away. And he makes choices now. They might not be forever, but he makes choices now that he knows are right for him. And this keeps him in the right place. This keeps him on the path, the straight path. And that might not be forever, but for now, that's what he's chosen to do. That's not the same for everybody. But for him, that's what he's chosen to do. And we were having this conversation. So our journeys have obviously been a little bit different just from, you know, from what I've said. They're a little bit different, but we've got one massive thing in common. And that is that we both think we're addicted to Jesus. So we had a bit of a debate with other friends about, is it okay to be addicted to Jesus? We thought, well, do you know what? I want Jesus to control my life. Isn't that what addiction does? It controls you. Now, sometimes I call back that control and say, actually, God, if I could just do this. Well, that's when things go wrong. You know, I need him to control my life. I need that. I'm crazy about God. I'm crazy about him. So is this man. This is what we are talking about. That song, Addicted to Love, Robert Palmer, wasn't it, for you older people like me? Addicted to Love. And it is love. Jesus is love. And that thing of, you know, not being able to live without him, him consuming your thoughts, it is addictive, but it's good. It surely is the only good one. Because when I stop thinking about Jesus, that's when things go wrong. That's when I take over and things go a little bit wrong in my life. But actually, how much time do I spend talking about that? How much time do I spend saying, this is what he's done for me. This is how he's changed my life. That's what it's about. That's what is important. And I was reminded of this. Something happened before. Mark and I were away. We went to Egypt for a holiday. And every morning we get the bus to the beach at 8 o'clock each morning. We go down to the beach. Now, me and Mark are very different on holiday. We just have different things going on. He's wondering what I'm going to say now. So we get to the beach, and Mark... So we've just got out of bed, and Mark gets onto another bed and goes back to sleep. I never quite understood that. You get out of bed and get on... But anyway, he's on holiday. So we get to the beach, he lies out his towel, and he lies on his sunbed, and he goes to sleep. Okay, he's gone to sleep. Do you know, I had such an amazing time, because I'm ready to go at that time. I've had my sleep, and there's no one else around. There was only, in fact, the English people weren't even on the beach. They all stayed around the pool. They were even up when we left. So it was us and a load of Russians on the beach. But they stayed up there. So we were down on the beach. So I had the beach to myself every morning. And that was my time with Jesus. And I'd go on the beach, and I was so excited. I felt like a kid because I missed him. Because I've been in a season of just ridiculous franticness, and I think I've lost sight of that. I know he's with me all the time, I'm crazy about him, but that quality, like, I just want to be with Jesus. So for this week that we were here, that's what I did. That was my time with Jesus, and I'd go on the beach, and I'd be like, oh, this is great. And so I'd be on there, and I'd be chatting to him, and then I found this heart-shaped stone on the beach the first day, and I was like, oh, that's like the love of Jesus. That's really exciting. Anyway, then, over the next few days, I kept finding heart-shaped stones. They were, and I got to this point where I was like, oh, I know some of you think I'm mad, but it's okay. It's okay. This is my walk with Jesus. And I'd be like, he's put them there for me. He's put heart-shaped stones. He loves me that much. And in that week, I connected with Jesus again in a different way, in a like, this is what it's about. This was back in November, December when we went. But it was such a powerful experience for me. So simple. And I collected all these precious stones. There was one day there was a rock out, and I felt him saying to me, come and sit on the rock. Obviously he's not saying, when I say saying to me, I don't mean he's saying it to me audibly, but I just sensed it. So I went up onto this rock. There's no shells or stones or anything on this rock. When I got to the top of this rock, there was a heart-shaped stone. And I was just like, you've even left one on the top of the rock. And it was just like, I felt so loved, I felt so treasured, and I felt so, he's got time to be with me, just me, just by myself. And it was, anyway, I grew a lot. I learned a lot that week. And we had a special time when we got back to the airport. So I carefully, like, got all my stones, and it's really exciting, and put them in my bag, put them in my suitcase, and then we went through security at the airport, fine. Went through another security check, it's fine. And then just when we were about to board the plane, there was two queues to get in the aeroplane, to get on the... just literally outside the aeroplane. And there was a long queue and a short queue. So obviously you're going to go for the short queue. So we went for that one. And then I just had this bad feeling in me. And I said to the man, whatever he was, I said, is this the same queue for the same plane? He said, yes. And then I was looking all like, I just something didn't like it. And he said, it's okay. It is the same queue. thinking back, I wonder if it was Jesus saying, don't go in that one, because they're going to nick your stones. So anyway, the point was, the long queue was the one going on where from their bags were all checked, so it's fine. The small queue, they decided to do this ultra thorough, get everything out, all your boxes out, go through your wash bag, all that sort of thing. So me and Mark were in that queue. So he had a man search his bag, I had a woman search mine, and they were all with their, you know, thingies on, and you couldn't, it's a very bit, little bit like, oh, it's Egypt, and it's a bit scary. Anyway, they found my heart-shaped stones. My gosh, you think I was smuggling heroin? This woman was just like, Egypt, Egypt. She was holding my stones, and I felt like a criminal. I was just like, oh my gosh, I didn't know I wasn't allowed to take stones from the beach. I just felt naked. I felt like, what? So she said to the man next to her who was searching Mark's bag, she sort of nudged him, and they were like, and he told me off as well, and they were telling me off, and so I said, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And she's going, Egypt. Anyway, and then, so she packed it all back in, and I was thinking, there's a little box that big. It's my shower cap. You know, you have the shower caps. I take it, and I filled that with, and I thought, it's still in there, she hasn't found it. And then I suddenly said, there's one you haven't found, and I gave it to her. I just had this moment of, like, I felt really ashamed. Like, gosh, I've done something terrible. Anyway, over the coming days, I got the plane. I thought, I said to Mark, she took my shells, she took my stones. Well, of course, Mark's a man. He hadn't had that same thing going on. It's just like, he was just like, well, good, less clutter in our house, you know. I got no understanding or compassion from Mark about it. But actually, I sensed, so I went through it. I was like, God, why didn't you tell me not to, like, why did you do that? And then I didn't have that anymore. It was take, what was going on? But I sensed, I didn't know what it was, but I sensed inside me that he was going to teach me something from this. Something's going to come out of it. So following on from, you know, it's taken a while, and it's quite a funny story, but actually he has taught me something through it, because what I was doing was I was wanting something that was symbolic. That those heart-shaped stones symbolized his love for me. That our time together, what he gives to me, how much he means to me. That's what that symbolized. And do you know what God said to me? He said to me, you can be robbed of everything in life. You know? You can be robbed of your loved ones. You can be robbed of your home. You can be robbed of your job. You can be robbed of your innocence. That's what happened to me. When I was abused, my innocence was taken. I was robbed. Everything can be taken in this world from you. Look at the tragedies in this world that go on. Look at what people suffer. It's horrific what goes on. But he said to me, there's one thing that can't be taken from you, and that's my love. That's my love. And that's in my heart, my heart. No one can take that from me. No one can take from me what Jesus has done for me. Ever, ever, ever. That can never be taken from me. And that's precious, you know. And I think back, and I think, do you know what? I used to genuinely believe that if you cut me open, if you cut open my body and opened it up, there would be black. That's how much I hated myself. I thought there would be black. That's all you'd see. And do you know what now? And I don't know where I've heard this before, but somewhere I heard a little boy or a little girl said it. I don't know if they were dying or what the situation was. But something about if you cut them open, you find Jesus inside. I don't know where I've heard that. But now I think, do you know what? Jesus has done that to me. Like I don't feel that black. There's still dark areas, but Jesus is in my heart. Jesus lives in my heart. I don't think I'm full of black anymore. I think I've got, gosh, I've got stuff that I need to get rid of. I've got darkness that needs to go, because the more we're filled with light, the more the darkness can go. And I'm not pretending by any means that I'm there. But I see myself in a different light, because he's meeting my needs, because I'm looking to him. He's my self-worth. He gives me my self-worth. He gives me my security. He gives me my significance. I used to look in the mirror and think, what the hell is that I'm looking at? I hated what I saw. God changes us. And that's something no one can take away. And do you know what? What I talked about my dad, about him rescuing me from that place. He knew when he did that, he knew that they were going to come take me back. He knew that. But he still did it. He still did what he could at that time. He came in, he risked his reputation. You know, he ended up that night with a fire engine up at the vicarage with them trying to get me back and police and all sorts of things. He didn't put himself first. He made a sacrifice. He sacrificed himself for me because he loved me that much. Even though he knew they'd come take me back. And do you know what the difference is with Jesus is that there's no going back. You know, they can't do that. Nobody can do that. When Jesus rescues us, it's for good, unless we choose to walk away from him. You know, we won't be snatched back tomorrow. The enemy tries to snatch us back. He might say, oh, things will be better. Come, you know, life's pretty hard going along with Jesus, you know, not especially that, especially this, and he'll condemn you for this. Rubbish. He doesn't condemn us. He convicts us because he wants us to live abundant lives. He doesn't want us doing things that mess things up. So he draws us to him. But he doesn't rescue us. He didn't die on that cross. He didn't die on that cross saying, well, this will keep you going for a few weeks. Then it will be back to life as it was. Go back to condemning yourself, hating yourself, looking in the mirror and thinking you look like a... You know, he's not like that. He says, I rescue you and it's permanent. I rescue you and it's for eternity. You're going to come live with me in heaven. Bring others with you. Bring who you can. Round them up and take them. Just like Vic rounded up the women to go to that conference. Isn't that what we need to do? Isn't that what being salt and light is about? Jesus said, I have come that you may have life. He's called us to be salt and light in a broken world, and that is a privilege. All we need to do is open that door of our hearts and let that light flood in. And then we can light that way for others. I think that there's this thing, if you know Jesus, everyone is in a different place, but if you know Jesus, I can become a little bit complacent with the past in thinking, yeah, Jesus changed my life, but now it's good. And I think that thing of remembering what it's like is good, actually, because that's what we live in. And I think the point is, like I said just now, there's no going back. That's what I left that conference with, those words. There's no going back. And you know, we can take our eyes off Jesus like Peter did when he started sinking. That's when it goes wrong, when we take our eyes off Jesus. It's all about him. It's all about what he's done. And it's all about the journey that we go on so that we can glorify his name. That's what this is about. I've asked Danny if he can play this song, and then I'm going to pray, if that's okay. church, you know, we're all going along this together. But I, even then, when that, when those words were playing, sweep away the darkness, you know, isn't that what we need to do together? And then we can shine, you know. That's a process. It's no good us pretending everything's okay all the time. We've all got stuff that needs sweeping out so that we can shine as a church, so we can be like Scott said in his prayers, you know, so we can be a lighthouse. I can't remember exactly what he said, but, you know, so we can do that, so we can shine, so we can be like Jesus asked us to be, that light to the world. That's what this is about. That's what church is about. That's why he's put us here. I put some, I just wrote a bit of a declaration this morning, and I put it up there because I don't know if any of you, rather than me just praying, I don't know if you, any of you want to join me with this. There's no pressure. If you want to stay sitting, that's fine. If you don't want to join in, that's fine. If you want to echo these words in your heart, that's fine. If you want to stand up with me and say it out loud, then that's great. But do whatever you want to do. But I just felt these words passionately this morning. So I just want to share them with you. And I'm going to say them. And if you want to do whatever you want to do, just join with me. Okay. I want to make a declaration to you that you are my God, that I will love you for the rest of my days. Thank you for saving me. Thank you for loving me. Help me love as you love me. Ignite a fire in me that will never go out, so that I can tell of how you give meaning to life through your word and through your spirit. So that I can tell of how you take the broken pieces of our lives and put them back together. I want to shine for you, Jesus. Sweep away the darkness and flood us with your light so that I can glorify your name. Amen. Thank you, God, that we are free to say those words, that we can meet in this place. God, you are building your church. Your church is precious to you. Take us, Jesus. Take us as individuals and take us as a family, as a body in this place, and build us, guide us, give us direction. Sorry, Jesus, for our mistakes, for our failings. But God, know our heart is to shine for you. Teach us how to shine in this place. Teach us how to light up our village, light up our community. And show people that don't know you that there is hope, that there is life, that there is a way through this darkness, and that there is eternity. Use us, I pray. Join us in unity to be salt and light in this dark world.